This is the Mad Radio Podcast. Mike Meltzer with you, trying something new. Bring in some people who are interesting and who I think are going to lend some insight into some of the sports stories of the day. So joining me now in studio is my friend John Long, who works at the law firm of Jackson Lewis. And John, I want to have you in to talk about this Urban Meyer situation in Ohio State. So first of all, thank you for coming in this morning. I appreciate it.
Mike, it's an absolute pleasure.
So this has been interesting from my standpoint. Candidly, I grew up in Connecticut, and I'm a Michigan fan. And so I do not like Ohio State football. But in this situation, I'm just sort of analyzing it through the prism of someone, you know, who goes to law school part-time, was, you know, 1 year left in law school and kind of looking at what's going on right now. So with the Meyer situation, based on everything that's gone on, Urban Meyer, the head coach of Ohio State, is now on paid administrative leave. Ohio State has an investigation that's taking place with, I think, six different people, and I believe it's like six internal, six external people who are investigating Meyer. We'll find out his status in 2 weeks. I guess I'll just start with your overall thoughts on this situation with Urban Meyer's statements to the media, Big Ten media days a few weeks ago, about Zach Smith, his former receivers coach, who he ended up firing. He had a couple of domestic violence incidents in 2009 and 2015. I've talked way too long. I'll turn the floor over to you. What your thoughts are on this overall situation, where we are now with Ohio State?
Well, you know, there are two different considerations with this, Mike, and thanks for having me on again. You know, one of the considerations is the legal aspect of it, and probably the more profound and the bigger aspect is that we're talking about domestic violence. And coaches in particular are living in a much different world than they were, say, even 5-6 years ago. The micro-analysis that goes on, the reactions are larger, they're more profound, the social consensus that builds up through media outlets and other outlets that weren't necessarily as used and accessed a decade ago or so. There's a lot more sensitivity. There's a hypersensitivity, and it's palpable. So for coaches in particular, it's a dicey situation whenever you're talking about potential issues that could come out that could be transparent and could impact them. And for schools who are put in situations where you have coaches or assistant coaches who are confronted with these types of issues, you know, again, there are legal process considerations and there are real world considerations. So, you know, you asked me about my overall take on it. I think my overall take is when universities are confronted with these high profile and dicey PR situations concerning their coaches, it's typically in their best interest to try to promptly make a decision one way or the other.
One of the things I've heard, John, from Twitter and Facebook, and obviously when you go into those areas, people throw out all sorts of opinions. One of the things I've heard, I'm sure others have heard, is if Urban Meyer was not Urban Meyer, if he was some mid-leveling coach at the Division I level, he'd be fired by now. Do you agree with that? Do you disagree with that? What's your take on that?
Well, we're talking about a $38 million buyout.
Yes.
So Urban Meyer is not a normal coach. Just up front, put his success to the side. His success, put his pedigree, his profile, his celebrity. Throw that out to the side. We're talking about a state university, and we're talking about a potential $38 million exposure. So this is a different situation. You know, the reality is whenever you're talking about this much money, and if you are, like I said, you know, earlier, if you're going to try to make a prompt decision one way or the other, if you're an institution that is on the hook for someone that is owed this much money, you're probably going to want to go the route of a buyout and negotiate a buyout and to try to get that done as cleanly as possible. Whether that happens or not, I have no idea, Mike. But, yeah, to your point, absolutely, there is a difference.
So, John, when I took sports law at the University of Houston last spring, one of the cases that I'm sure is taught in every sports law class is the Ohio State versus Jim O'Brien case.
Yes.
And Jim O'Brien was a successful coach. I think they went to the Final Four 1 year in the late 90s, 2000s. He ended up getting fired, and I'm reading this case, and I was thinking to myself, this is complete BS that this guy was able to collect on his contract, because he paid a recruit basically who was, I think, coming over for overseas, as far as I recall the case. But Ohio State ended up losing that case, and they owe Jim O'Brien a lot of money. So I imagine that kind of thing plays a lot into, if you decide to let a coach go, you need to make sure to, like, mind your P's and Q's, dot your I's, cross your T's, all that.
Well, yeah, and when you think about, we got Ohio State in that situation. We're talking about Ohio State again. So for that institution in particular, you know, there's absolutely, that case is going to come to mind. Now, it's a little bit different because we're talking about NCAA infractions.
Yes.
In the O'Brien case versus here a criminal, potentially Title IX, but most likely we're talking about a criminal situation that happened in a private situation, allegedly, off campus and not an event that was connected to Ohio State. So it's a little bit different. But to your point, and this is what at Jackson Lewis, we are in a unique position where we are the most prominent firm that does sports investigations and handles these employment type matters. So we're in a position to talk about this. The process, the timing with which you move on a coach, if you're going to move on a coach for cause, which means, you know, for cause means the institution is not on the hook to pay any money going forward to that coach. It's a very delicate process. It's something that has to be played out with after strictly adhering to due process considerations, both contractually and as a state employee in this situation, with since Ohio State is a state institution. Your investigation needs to be on point. The coach needs to be afforded a chance to rebut any kind of conclusions that you form. And like in the O'Brien case, what we were talking about, if there is a tribunal that is involved with deciding whether or not an incident happened in an official capacity, you know, if an institution's going to do it the safest way, they'll likely wait for that tribunal to make a decision. Now, in this situation, we could be talking about a long time here because of a criminal process potentially playing out, if it is even going to at this point, which, you know, I don't know one way or the other.
Yeah.
It's an indefinite amount of time, Mike.
John, what I'm curious about is Urban Meyer. What are his responsibilities? He obviously is the reason why Zach Smith, the former receivers coach, was employed at Ohio State before a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. What are his responsibilities if he hears of some kind of incident, whether there's an arrest or not? What are his responsibilities as a head coach at a state institution about reporting that to the athletic director or whoever else? What does Urban Meyer have to do?
Well, see, Mike, and I'm glad that you asked that question, because I think one of the things that are getting probably the biggest thing that's being conflated in the reporting of this story and many stories like it is immediately Title IX. You know, the buzzword Title IX comes to play. And certainly the conduct of coaches can absolutely result in Title IX violations. But there is it's an important distinction that needs to be made. Title IX has requirements for reporting that responsible employees, that coaches, that basically any full-time employee with some kind of duty, profound full-time duty at an institution has to abide by, which means they have to report things that, if those things were true as they hear it and they believe that it could result in a Title IX violation, so that could be sexual assault, that could be a battery, that could be things like harassment, then those institutional employees will have a responsibility to make a report, say, to like a Title IX coordinator. I don't want to bore you too much here with all the minutia. But when you're talking about criminal incidents that happen off campus, you know, that's going to come down more to the contract language. That's going to be things that are more case by case and individualized. So that's why, you know, in a situation, if you're trying to move on a coach for cause, you're going to have to look for that for cause termination section in the contract, and you're going to have to see what's explicitly laid out. And if there are stipulations that were explicitly broken and can be clearly defined, well, that makes it easier for an institution to then go and say, well, look, you know, you violated your contract. It clearly says we can move on you for cause. If it's more generic in the way that the contract is worded, Mike, then in that situation, it's going to be dicier. It might be not as clean cut. And in those situations, it's more likely that a coach is going to be walking away with some money if the school still decides to move on the coach.
That's very interesting. John Long is my guest. He is from Jackson Lewis, the law firm here in Houston. And John does a lot of work in representing universities with NCAA situations. So it seems to me, based on what you just said, John, it's a pretty big deal from Urban Meyer's standpoint with the contract language of whether Zach Smith and his domestic violence allegations in 2009, in 2015, were actually on the campus of Ohio State or not. That makes a big difference from Meyer's standpoint.
Well, here's the deal, Mike. If we're talking about sexual misconduct that occurred or resulted in the victim being a student, another employee on the campus, then that clearly, if you have one employee who is, let's say, harassing another employee, or you got one employee who has sexually assaulted a student on the campus, then that is very clearly in the purview of Title IX. And that would be violations of federal law if it's not reported by a responsible employee, yada, 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 right? So, again, the distinction is, are we talking about something that is outside of the context of the school's sexual misconduct policy or something that is outside of the purview of Title IX and federal law? It's a little less clear, Mike, and I think that's probably why there still is some confusion on both sides of this issue. It's going to be a fact-intensive process to see when these incidents allegedly happen and what capacity they happen. If there is a connection, though, to an act that would theoretically, the way that the law is written in Title IX is if a institutional employee engages in conduct that is gender discriminatory, which includes sexual violence, that takes away from the ability of a female to enjoy the institution's athletics program, then that potentially could be in the purview of Title IX. You know, we don't know the facts here, but at this point in time, it appears that these allegations involve conduct that happened in a private place in situations that were not connected to the university. So
to follow up on that, and this is where I think the facts, almost like a law school exam, get kind of murky. Mm-hmm. So there are some reports, and I think maybe even text messages between Courtney Smith, who was Zach Smith, the receiver coach's ex-wife, mm-hmm. Courtney Smith and Shelly Meyer, who happens to be the wife of Urban Meyer, and not only happens to be the wife of Urban Meyer, also has some kind of role. I think she has a job at the university. When we throw something like that into the mix, what if Shelly Meyer knew about this? Then how does that change, if at all, this whole situation?
Well, you know, what I don't want to get in the practice of is trying to armchair lawyer here, and I certainly don't know all the facts as far as knowledge and what goes there. You know, to answer your question, Mike, I mean, it's going to come down to what are the obligations in an individualized contract for a coach to know. That's going to be an investigatory function. You know, Ohio State, to this point, I have to say, has done a fantastic job, from my opinion, as far as assembling an investigatory body that is, you know, it's objective. It's an Ohio-centric body. There's no question about it. But you're looking at individuals that are composed and that are going to be doing the lifting on this investigatory body. And it's not an internal investigation that's being handled by full-time employees at the university. So, and the promptness for which Ohio State has moved on this investigation as well, I think, is also very commendable. So I think they've done a great job. And I think some of these details and some of these questions are really going to be revealed whenever the process plays out, and we'll know a lot more at that point in time.
At this point, how can Urban Meyer keep his job?
Yeah, you know, that's also going to play out. That's going to be dependent on the process as well, Mike, because what we know is Ohio State's a state university. They are not afforded some of the protections from transparency that institutions who are private get to enjoy. Okay. So we know that there's going to be a very limited shield behind which any institution, state institution, especially one with as much visibility as this institution has, they're not going to be able to cover too much stuff up. So what that tells you is, if there are facts that come out in this investigation that seem to really implicate and look poorly on the institution, then that process is probably going to dictate that an institution is going to have to make a move if it's bad and it's severe enough, right? I think the way that he keeps his job is if he comes out looking good enough, satisfactory enough in the institution's eyes to where they feel like, you know, this is not a violation of the contract. It's not something that we think is something he can't get over. And they make that decision that, you know, he's worth it to us.
John Long is my guest from Jackson Lewis. It is Mike Meltzer on the Mad Radio podcast. So Urban Meyer released a statement on Friday, and I read the statement, and basically my main takeaway is that Meyer admitted that he did not really fully disclose the truth to the media a few weeks ago at Big Ten Media Days when he was talking about Zach Smith and the domestic violence allegations against him in 2015. And he also basically directly said that he reported it to his athletic director. What did you think of that statement?
Well, as an attorney, you know, you're going to do whatever you can to protect your client's best interest. Yep. So, you know, I'd have to say it. I have to defer to Urban Meyer's attorney in that situation, who knows much more than I certainly know about the facts of the situation, the case, and say that, you know, you're going to do whatever you can to advocate on behalf of your client. So you know, that statement, Meyer's counsel, and I guess their admission to some extent in that statement is what they felt was the best thing for him to do at that point in time. So.
One of the things I'm curious about, and I don't know if this question is exactly up your alley, but in terms of the PR impact, mm-hmm. So I think one of the most interesting things that you've mentioned so far in our interview is just the part that, which people may not realize, that Urban Meyer may not have a duty if, you know, there is some sort of allegation criminally that happens off campus to a non-university employee. He may not necessarily have, by the language of his contract, a responsibility to report that. The PR impact, like we all know, we casually know, like, college football and basketball recruiting is probably a cesspool. All sorts of things go on. So I imagine this, like, in the Big Ten, Michigan, you know, Purdue, Penn State. I imagine, I don't know about Michigan State for obvious reasons, but I imagine they're going to look at this situation, and moving forward, they might say, hey, no matter if Urban Meyer, let's say Urban Meyer stays and they suspend him for a couple games, whatever it might be, then can't these schools negatively recruit by basically saying, hey, Urban Meyer might say he reported this in 2015, but this guy, Urban Meyer, lied to the media about this. And you tell the moms of recruits, that's what this guy did. If you're part of the people making the ultimate call at Ohio State, how do you weigh, in your opinion, the did he technically break his contract versus the PR stuff? Because the PR stuff in college football is a big deal, because it's not like the NFL. They have to actually go out and recruit players, and this kind of stuff is a big deal in that context.
Yeah, well, you know, Mike,
I know there's a lot there to that.
Yeah, no. One of the things that I think in any coach, you know, this is an unfortunate truth of the industry, but I think that any coach who gets caught up in a scandal these days at least has the comfort of knowing another coach at another program's coming in 2 weeks and he'll get caught up in a scandal.
Yeah.
I mean, let's look at the history here, and let's look at how many coaches at how many programs have we seen who have gotten swept up. And whether it's NCAA, whether it's sexual misconduct, whether it's reporting issues, again, you know, we're in a world right now where there's more transparency, there's more awareness, there are more outlets for individuals to blow the whistle on potential conduct violations. That I'm not sure if to a recruit are you deciding between. Which devil's worse? You know what I mean? As far as conduct goes. So ultimately, I mean, look, how many players is Urban Meyer put in the NFL?
I mean, I'm just going to guess 100.
Yeah,
that might be a lot.
You know, how many playoffs has he already been in? You know? So there's plenty where you can recruit positively. And I think that every institution is aware that sometimes with recruits that some of the positives that come with success on the field and drafting and things like that are always going to carry the weight ultimately on the trail. To your point, though, I think that institutions are going to look at this situation. They're going to assess the way that they draft their contracts. There's nothing that prevents an institution from, more strictly defining conduct obligations and reporting obligations that go beyond federal law.
Yeah.
And because here's the thing, Mike, if you're going to move on a coach for a clause that doesn't quite fit, you know, say I know that there's been talk about a Title IX clause in this Ohio State situation, this and that. But, you know, more theoretically speaking, if you're going to try to move on a coach by saying that they violate a provision of conduct and that does not fit with what happened, you're going to set yourself up to eat it in litigation. So then if you want to rely on a more generic clause to try to move on a coach, say, you know, the coach did something of a moral turpitude that represents the program or puts the program in a negative light, which is a pretty common clause that's contained in most of these coaches' contracts.
Okay.
It's more generic, you know, and you are more at risk by saying, hey, you know, did X coach do something by not reporting something that is of moral turpitude in and of itself that represents or that puts the program in a negative light. You know, I mean, if you look at this particular situation right now, you got a big group of people who are protesting on both sides. You know, you got some who believe that Urban Meyer's been wronged, you know? So,
yes.
So defining something like that as moral turpitude might be a little bit foggier, and you know, it might be a little bit tougher if you're the institution to move on it. So other institutions may look at this and say, look, we got to more strictly define exactly what we expect from our coaches.
That's interesting. John, thank you very much. Yep. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike.
John Long from Jackson Lewis, my guest on the Mad Radio podcast on Sports Radio 610.